Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program for the month this afternoon. Here to take your calls is Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick, a veterinary specialties referral center in Pattersonville, New York, a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Surgeons. Dr. Fitzpatrick is a graduate of the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. She did her residency at Cornell, where she specialized in orthopedic and soft tissue surgery. She joined the Veterinary Specialties Referral Center in 2010. Her areas of interest include angular limb deformities, corrective osteotomies, surgical oncology, and minimally invasive procedures. She has also done extensive research in post-operative pain management. A native of Florida, she enjoys everything about the Capital Region, the people, the pets, and according to the script, even the weather. We'll quiz her about that in a moment. Dr. Fitzpatrick, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
The weather is okay even now?
Well, it's a little cold.
Aha,
I complain the entire winter.
Yes, me too, and I'm from around here. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, you're settled in. The calls are coming in. Are you ready?
I guess let's get started.
Let's roll. Douglas in High Falls, you're on.
Hey.
How are you?
My pointer is 8.5 years old. He's got a skin tag on the lower left eyelid, about 1/4 inch in diameter. I understand this might be due to some allergies. I'm wondering if you would recommend the minimally invasive procedure to remove it. I know anesthetic is involved, but what's your counsel on this? It seems to be growing very, very incrementally.
And how long has this mass been present?
I would say about 6 months.
About 6 months, and it is slowly growing. Is the eye seem to be bothered by it? Does it water, or does your dog squint?
He doesn't appear to be bothered by it.
Okay. Generally speaking, these things are better dealt with when they're smaller rather than to let them grow. Surgery becomes more difficult once they're bigger, just with resecting the eyelid. Depending on the nature of this mass, sometimes we can use things like cryotherapy to freeze them off, or sometimes just even a cautery to at the base of it, if it has a very narrow base, to just kind of snip it off and it won't grow back. But some of these are a little bit more involved with the eyelid, and they do require a more invasive type of a surgery where we're taking part of the eyelid and suturing the eyelid back together. And of course, you've got to get the edges pretty spot on so you're not damaging the eye in that area.
So what's your counsel? Yes, do it, or leave it and wait?
Well, if it's growing, I would say now is the time to deal with it before it gets to be too big and more invasive type surgery is needed.
I should remind you, Douglas, that you know, it's very, whenever we do a medical show of this nature, you really can't make a diagnosis without seeing the patient.
No, I understand.
So
I understand.
She can offer advice, but really, you know, it's not set in stone. All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Our guest is Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick, and we go to line number two. It's Sharon on the Mass Pike. I hope your hand's free today.
Yes, sir, always.
Okay, you're on.
All right, thanks, Ray. And hello, doctor. I have actually a question about possibly depression and winter blues with dogs. We had a Labrador that actually passed away in April, and my dog is 11. They were companions for the last 3 years, and she seemed kind of depressed afterwards and mopey, but once the summer came along, she likes to be outside, so she perked up. But mm-hmm. I've noticed that she's gotten back to those ways where she was kind of like segregating herself. She's segregating herself from the family. She goes upstairs and hangs out in this one room, and I was just wondering if you have any suggestions or options, or do dogs suffer from depression?
Well, I do think that they do suffer from depression. It's hard to say because you can't, you know, specifically ask them, but we do notice that, especially in animals who have been together for quite some time, and it can be dog-cat. It doesn't have to be specifically dog-to-dog relationships, but it does seem like after one passes away that the other goes through a grieving period. it's a bit unusual that when your dog seemed to get over this over the summer, and then now again in the winter is kind of demonstrating the same behavior. Has your dog had a checkup recently to make sure that it's otherwise healthy?
Yes, she has allergy issues, so I have to bring her every about 2 months to get her glands expressed. And
gotcha.
Yeah. She was checked out about 2 months ago. She had an ear thing going on as well, too. But she seems otherwise, I mean, when I bring her out for a walk, she's wonderful.
Uh-huh.
And she likes to be outside, and I think maybe that's possibly it.
Yeah, it might be that with the colder weather, she's kept indoors more, and so she doesn't see as much stimulation out in the environment as she would if she were outdoors more.
Okay.
It may be weather-related. It also could be, you know, arthritis, so that gets worse as the weather gets colder. Definitely something that maybe just some extra time outside.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's what we'll try that. And if that doesn't work, then I'll make her get her checked out with the vet.
There you
go. Thank you so very much.
You're welcome. Sure.
Thanks a lot, and drive safely. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Pets and Vets for the month of December. Courtney Fitzpatrick is our guest. Richard in Northampton is on. Hi, Richard.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Nice to have you here.
So the situation I have is we got two cats. We actually had three. One didn't survive. That one of them we had to tube feed. They had fleas to the point that they had anemia. They were basically going to die. Mm-hmm. And one of them started eating right away and is fine. The other one, she pulled her hair out all the time. And it seems to be worse in winter. They tried a steroid on her at one point, injection. Didn't seem to make a whole lot of difference.
Hmm.
It's she doesn't have, like, one hot spot.
Right.
She pulls her hair out from everywhere.
And how old
more
is
more loss in the back end because she can reach it better.
Sure. How old is the kitty?
About a year and a half.
A year and a half. And you guys have gotten rid of all the fleas? Because flea allergies can definitely cause that.
Yeah, Richard, we're having a little trouble with your cell phone. Maybe listen to the answer here on the air.
Yeah, so I mean, there are things like allergies, especially flea allergies, which will cause a cat to pull their hair out. Environmental allergies can particularly do it as well. Some animals, it's more of a psychosis, where they become kind of obsessed, like an OCD type condition.
Yeah.
But certainly something I would get the skin checked out first. So it may be, depending on what treatments have already been done, may want to seek out a dermatologist and see if there's something a bit deeper underlying this problem.
Yeah, you know, we've had vets on this program who say, you know, cats can be notoriously neurotic, and that's really true. Yeah,
that's what happens when we take our predatory cats and we make them indoor kitties, and we take away all of the, you know, the hunt and the chase and that kind of stimulation. So, you know, some cats, they get bored. Others, you tease them with laser pointers and then they start seeing lasers everywhere.
All right, let's go to Jeremy in Kerhonkson. Jeremy, you're on.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question regarding my wife and my male cat. We have a male cat. He's pretty old, and he has a problem with spraying. And years ago, we took him to a vet, and they informed us that he had been. This is when we first got him. They informed us that he had been neutered, and they sort of gave us some pointers about. Cleaning up the areas to make sure he doesn't do it again and this and that. But, I have a question about, you know, I'm wondering if he's spraying or if he's just urinating or if, you know, if you have any advice with this. Because my wife and I, we love the cat, but we're losing our minds.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. Is it, do you ever see this happen or is it kind of you find the urine somewhere?
No, we see it happen all the time. He sort of has no... Yeah, we see it.
Does he, like, back up to something and swish his tail, or does he look like he's normally urinating as if he would in a litter box?
No, he's backing up to something. Looks like a fire scud missile.
Yeah.
Nice.
Nice. That's great. You know, this could be behavioral. In kitties, we were just talking about kitties with some psychosis problems. They can certainly have behavioral issues where they inappropriately spray. Sometimes, though, they can have inflammatory conditions of the bladder that make it irritating, and that can make them want to urinate inappropriately outside of the litter box and things. And so it's something that if it hasn't been checked recently, before I start going down the behavioral route and blaming it on the kitty's behavior, then I would recommend a urinalysis. Take a urine sample from the cat and test it and see if there's signs of infection or inflammation of the urine, which may be kind of triggering him to want to pee inappropriately.
Does he ever pee in the box?
You know, he does, but he seems, he almost seems like he's got a mind of his own. Like, he'll go down to the box, and he'll sort of look at the box, he'll look at you, he'll look at the box, and then he'll go spray the wall or something. You know?
How clean do you keep your litter box?
it's sort of downstairs, adjacent to the garage, in a heated area,
The best thing that I say when you're dealing with a cat who's inappropriately urinating, the next step after making sure it's not a medical problem is to make sure that there's plenty of litter boxes. So the number of cats in your household, add one, and that's how many litter boxes you should have. And make them in places that are where the cat wants to spend time. Like if the cat spends a lot of time in the living room, then make it pretty accessible. Don't make it in a dark, scary place down the hall. And definitely keep it as clean as you possibly can. Preferably once a day, even twice a day for our problem kitties.
Especially if it's in the living room. You're going to want to do that.
Absolutely.
All right, Jeremy, we got to take a break. Thank you for the call. Our guest is Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick, and it is Pets and Vets, as you may have guessed. We'll be back with more calls at 1-800-348-2551.
Support for WMC comes from the 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York, a newly renovated Hudson Valley boutique hotel featuring 12 guest rooms with modern amenities, holiday gift certificates available online, the1850house.com. Woodstock School of Art, offering holiday gift certificates and art classes in painting, drawing, sculpture, printmaking, and more, woodstockschoolofart.org for 2014 class schedule. Collins Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollinsStreetMotors.com. And Juan Dharma Center near Hudson, New York, hosting a year-end meditation retreat exploring the basics of Buddhist meditation techniques December 26th through 29th. JuanDharmaCenter.org for details and reservations.
One 800 348 2551 is our telephone number. It's Vox Pop. Call in 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick is our guest. It's Pets and Vets for the month of December, and Claudine in Stone Ridge. Claudine, you're on.
Hi, I'm calling about a 12-week-old wonderful toy poodle that we purchased from a breeder. Unfortunately, he jumped from the sofa about 2 weeks after we got him, and did not fall well, hurt himself, had a strange reaction, splayed legs, doddering head, took him to the vet, neurologically seemed fine, but increasingly became in pain, was prescribed Rimadyl, and now his neurological problems seem worse. When you do the knuckle test, he shows delayed reaction and sleeps a lot. We don't want to go the surgery route necessarily. We're hoping that by starting him on steroids, which we don't really like on such a young puppy, that may be an option, but we don't know what that reaction will be.
How long ago did this injury happen?
It happened about 3 weeks ago. He's in a little neck brace.
Okay. Did your vet take an x-ray and diagnose a fracture in the spine?
No, the x-ray did not show anything. He did take an x-ray, but not the one where you have to sedate the animal to get a full
gotcha.
One.
Gotcha.
He is small. He's a toy.
Yeah.
The x-ray did not show any fractures. We're wondering if he had this
what do you call that?
A subluxation?
Yes, that's common in toy breeds, and the fall could have exacerbated it if it was congenital.
That's possible. That is definitely one of the conditions to consider is a subluxation of the spine, especially right up behind the skull. And that would be a particular situation where all 4 feet would be affected. So I'm not sure, is your puppy just affected in the back legs or in all four?
It seems to vary.
Okay. I mean, with a fall like that in such a small dog, we certainly would worry about injury to the spine, whether it is this subluxation or even a fracture of the bone or possibly something like a disc herniation, a traumatic disc herniation, not the chronic kind that come on later in life. But something where, you know, essentially the best way to tell would be some more imaging studies, more than even just x-rays can provide. A lot of times we're talking a CAT scan or an MRI, and that does have to be under anesthesia as well. And aside from surgery, I mean, the steroids are a route to try. They do have a lot of side effects, but it's something that will decrease the inflammation. The problem is, without knowing what you're treating, we could still have an unstable spine and your puppy could become suddenly worse after.
Okay.
I mean, yesterday we picked him up, as we often do, you know, just to make sure, give him TLC and all of that, because he's fine. And he just went into a total spasm.
Oh, that's such a hard situation to be in.
It is. We don't want it. So we're concerned, you know, will the steroids, how much time should we give the steroids to work?
Yeah. It's a hard call, and without seeing your dog, it's really hard to make that judgment, but it's definitely a tough situation you're in.
Thanks, Claudia. We appreciate it. We hope everything works out. Let's go to Leslie in Conway. Leslie, you're on.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call, and my heart goes out to that woman who just got off the phone. That's a tough situation. I feel bad for them. I'm going back to cats and skin issues. I have a 6 or 7 year old spayed female. She's overweight, not obesely fat, but way heavier than she should be, even though we watch her diet.
It's good of you to admit
our other
that.
Cat is, our other cat is skinny, so we have Jack Spratt and his wife. And, this kitty, I had some concerns about diabetes or kidney, although diabetes seemed more possible because she was urinating a lot, like a large amount in the box. And but she also has this skin irritation on her back where if you rub her or pet her or brush her, she starts to bite at you. But she likes the brushing. She likes a firm brushing.
It's kind of the gentle nibbling bite.
She's not. It's reflexive, really.
Right.
And so when we took her into the vet, they did a urine analysis, and the glucose levels were borderline high, on the high side. But she said it wasn't enough to make any kind of definitive diagnosis of diabetes because the glucose levels can go up just from nervousness of being in the vet.
Right.
But she didn't want to prescribe steroids until we knew that, because that could have adverse effects with a diabetic cat.
Absolutely.
So, she wants me to bring her back in for another glucose check, which I will be doing. However, in the meantime, she suggested maybe like doing an antihistamine to give my cat some relief.
Right.
And I am looking for some intermittent something to try that's not going to, you know, have a lot of side effects for her.
Sure.
But she's just tormented by this. The poor thing, she rips at her fur, and, you know, she's fat, so it's hard for her to get all the way back to where she needs to be.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I find clumps of fur everywhere, and it's not fleas. I've flea combed her. I've looked at it. I have a Furminator. I brush her with that to give her some relief. But there is some kind of dander, and almost dirt-looking stuff that almost looks like flea dirt, but I've never seen a flea on her, nor on my other pets. I have two dogs and another cat.
Hmm.
So, and the vet detected no sign of fleas and thought it was some kind of allergy.
Right.
I'm wondering if you have any suggestions after my long explanation there as to what I might be able to do to give her some relief in the interim.
Oh, well, I think your vet is spot on in the fact that if you have a borderline diabetic, steroids are probably the last thing that you want to give until you figure out, you know, whether the cat is actually diabetic, because steroids will make that harder to treat.
Oh.
Right.
And so your vet was absolutely right. You need to hold off on using those, which unfortunately are going to be the biggest relief for allergies is the steroids, but the diabetes is definitely takes precedence over the skin problems. So yeah, I would, as your vet suggested, try an antihistamine.
Yeah.
I can't prescribe you one not having seen your cat, but you know, definitely that's kind of the next best route to go. And there are different antihistamines out there that you can try, and some cats respond better to one over another.
Are they specialized for cats or pets, or are they just like the same ones you give people?
Benadryl, or
there's a little of both. You can use, there's some that are over the counter for people that you can use on pets, but then there are some that, you know, are more tailored to pets that we use more commonly in our pets. So,
okay, well, I'll call my vet and ask her what I can do for that. And I know that I have such a bad reaction to antihistamines. I didn't want it to happen to my cat.
I hear you. That may not be, though. You may be okay with your cat.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, I really, really appreciate your call and your sense of humor, too.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Bye now. Let's go over to Ed in Woodstock. Ed, you're up.
Yeah, I've got a 4-year-old cat, and seems to be vomiting a lot. He eats way too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And then he vomits. And the other day, he vomited up a worm about 8 inches long.
Wow.
And I can't tell. It's flat in one half and round on the other. So I don't know whether to get round medication or flat tapeworm medication.
Yikes.
Oh, my goodness. I wish I could see this worm. It's a little bit difficult to say if it was, you know, flat on one end and round on the other.
I notice a roundworm medicine doesn't seem to be good for tapeworm.
Right, right, exactly. There, you haven't seen any of the tapeworm segments, the little white rice-like things at the back of your cat?
No, not out the rear end. No.
Okay. I guess worm medicine is fairly safe, so if you're unsure, you know, you may want to ask your vet for both wormers, just in case there's, it's hard to say which one this was that you saw. So,
isn't the tapeworm medicine prescription only?
It is, as far as I recall. Being a surgeon, I don't really deal with dewormers a lot. That's more in the general practice realm, but I believe it is a prescription only. So you may want to call your vet and see if you can, get that.
I didn't know if the brown medicine would take care of it.
Usually not. Usually it's a different one.
And there's no other remedy other than prescription?
Not really, no.
Would that be causing the vomiting?
The vomiting may be that your cat's just eating too quickly.
He eats really quickly.
There are some diseases out there that can cause vomiting. But the other thing you can try is, you know, sprinkling the food over a larger area, maybe over the floor, or putting a little ball in the food bowl so your cat has to eat around it and slow it down.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that seems to help. Once in a while, he'll get the whole thing and gobble it before the other cat gets it.
Yeah, definitely try to slow the cat down, and I bet the vomiting will improve with that.
Okay.
Ed, thanks a lot for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick is our guest. It is, of course, Pets and Vets. And let's go over to line 3. Julie in Amsterdam, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a 17-year-old cat, and she's a medium-sized cat, but she was pretty hefty. And one day I noticed she just really kind of stopped eating food. She was going through a lot of water. She was urinating a lot. And then probably about a week later, I saw that her lower fang was broken and hanging out of her mouth.
Ooh.
Yeah, I took her to the vet. They removed the fang. They just basically pulled it out. They x-rayed her. They couldn't figure out how she possibly could have broken the fang. There was no fracture in the jaw or anything.
Huh.
But also her glucose was really high.
Right.
So I've changed her food from the dry kibble to canned food with lower protein, and she's eating just fine, but she's lost like 4 pounds in 3 months, and she's now looking quite thin, and it's got me concerned. And also, she doesn't really go to the bowl like she used to. We kind of have to coax her and pet her while she eats.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if the diet change I made was appropriate. Maybe if I should put her back on the kibble. I'm just not sure what to do with the weight loss and everything.
Yeah. Now, you said that the blood work showed that there was a high glucose. Was that like in the diabetes range, or are you aware of...
They said that it was just in the range of diabetes, and they said, you know, that I could get like a glucometer and start testing her blood sugar and give her human insulin. And I'm like, you know, she's 17.
Yeah.
I
really
want to do that to her. So
yeah. This may be, if she is a diabetic, then you may be seeing kind of some of the side effects of diabetes. And there are certain diets out there to help try to control, diabetes with the diet alone. But yeah, unfortunately you're looking at like insulin routes to treat that, but, it sounds like, you know, you may want to take your cat back in for some recheck blood work to see what things have done over the last few months, because, not only can diabetes cause weight loss, but things like kidney failure and thyroid issues as well.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I would start with, is actually some recheck of the lab work and see exactly where your cat's at right now.
Okay. So is it pretty much the route's going to be, if I can't control it with her diet, then it's going to be the insulin?
Unfortunately, yeah. That's the best help for these cats with the diabetes.
Okay.
Okay. So at this point, like, what would I expect her lifespan to be? If she doesn't have that much time left, I don't want to be sticking her multiple times a day.
Right. It's hard for me to give you that idea, not having examined your cat and the blood work and everything. So I guess I would defer back to what your vet thinks, because they have all of that kind of clinical impression.
17 years is a pretty good run already.
That is a pretty good run. That's an old kitty right there.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Julie, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
I know. Now, we've had several calls already, Doctor, about diabetes in cats. How prevalent is it?
Oh, it's something that it's not uncommon, I would say. So it is something that with our kitties, as they eat more, then they
don't eat sweets.
Weight.
I mean, what happens? How does that work?
It's the obesity, and it's just like in people when they get type 2 diabetes related to obesity, and in cats it's the same issue that we have. Yeah.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Pets and Vets. Courtney Fitzpatrick is our guest. We go to Barbara in Woodstock. Barbara, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I adopted a toy poodle, 6 pounds, from what supposedly was a high-end kennel. I wanted an older dog.
Hey, Barbara. Are you on speakerphone by any chance?
Yeah.
Could we go to a handset if possible?
Okay, hold on.
Thanks.
Hi, can you hear me?
Much better. Okay, go ahead.
All right. I adopted this toy poodle from supposedly a high-end kennel. I wanted a dog that they were retiring, you know, and she had one who was a breeder dog. And then she tells me that this dog had never been outside in all of her 6 years, and that she had... she just had not been around people. You know what I mean? She was, but she did the breeding. So I brought her home, and she's wonderful, but there was a lot of work to be done. I've had her almost a year. My question is, I didn't want to get her spayed right away. It would have been too much trauma for her. I mean, when she discovered after a few weeks that she was in a safe place and it was comfortable and she wasn't in a crate or a cage, she was worried even if somebody came to the door to take her. So, but over time, she's turned back into what she should be, a dog, you know? And my question is, she's almost seven now. Should I take her to the vet and get her spayed? Or is it okay not to?
That's a good question. You know, from a there's a few different standpoints to look at this from. Generally speaking, why we recommend dogs get spayed, for obviously the obvious reason is population control. But if you can keep your dog separate from other dogs, then you know that so much isn't an issue. But then let's go down the medical route. A dog, when they're spayed as puppies, which is what we typically recommend for the average dog who's not going to be bred, we recommend spaying them before their first heat, because it decreases their risk of ovarian cancer. Now, after they go through a couple heats, there's no protective effect on spaying them when it comes to ovarian cancer. However, it does affect them as far as the uterus can develop an infection in it, which can be a deadly infection called pyometra. They can develop breast tumors, and we think that maybe spaying them may have some impact on that, although that's a little bit questionable.
Even later
in life.
Okay.
And so the biggest worry, though, is the pyometra, the infection of the uterus, which can be so deadly
and can
make it very complicated to spay them when they do develop that. So I guess,
see.
You know, from my perspective, the safest thing probably would be to get her spayed.
Okay. All right. I didn't want to do it earlier because, you know, for what I said, but I think that after having her for a year, she could tolerate being separated enough to get spayed. And if there's a physical reason to do it, I'll do it. Otherwise, I won't.
Right.
And I appreciate your advice. So I guess I will do it.
Okay. Well, thanks, Barbara. We appreciate the call.
Thank you very much. Bye.
So is there a psychological effect now of a dog that's further on in life being spayed?
Not really. Not that we appreciate anyway. It seems like they tolerate it very well. They get through anesthesia usually, as long as they don't have any other medical problems. We don't have too much in the way of issues.
Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. It's Vox Pop. It's Pets and Vets. How can you lose? 20 minutes to go. Get in line.
Support for WAMC comes from Washington County Tourism and the towns and villages therein, featuring museums, art venues, farmers markets, specialty shops. For holidays and gift certificates, WashingtonNYCounty.com. Sunflower Natural Food Market, Woodstock, accepting pre-orders for humanely raised organic and natural holiday turkeys, locally made pies, and organic produce and fixings, 845-679-5361, extension 1. Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing ophthalmology, surgery, and internal medicine services for dogs and cats, now offering laser eye surgery, VESHDeerfield.com. And MySci Museum of Innovation and Science, now presenting the new holiday exhibit, Trains and Toys, and accepting registrations for the New Year's Eve Camp-In for Kids, MISCI.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Pets and Vets this afternoon with Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick. And line one, it's Rihanna in Brunswick. You're on.
Hi, I have a 10-year-old Maltese who has had some health problems. He also is almost blind at this point, and it is very hard to handle him. He gets aggressive. You can pet him, but you know, grooming him is really hard. Getting anywhere near him to try and brush his teeth is very difficult. But his teeth are at a point where they're really bad, you know, not falling out. There is still a chance that said if we had him put under that they could clean his teeth. However, because of some of his past health problems, there's a danger in putting him to sleep. So my question is it worth it to take that risk? Do I just let his teeth continue to decay and, you know, probably eventually they'll have to be pulled anyways? Not, I feel like I'm, you know, being neglectful because he's got this mouth of horrible teeth, but I'm not really sure, you know, what to do. In the past, the vet said don't worry, or the neurologist actually, because he had an autoimmune blood disease and was on prednisone for a few years, but now he's in remission. But at that point, they said, you know, don't, the teeth are the least of its problem right now. Let's get past this. So I'm just trying to weigh the risk and not really sure what the best thing for him is.
Absolutely. That's a really tough situation to be in when you have a pet who's not otherwise healthy and is looking at anesthesia. But unfortunately, the teeth are something that does affect their quality of life when it comes to pain of the teeth. And it's not going to get anything but worse, unfortunately. So, you know, I would say that if we're debating on doing it now versus waiting, you know, he may accumulate more problems as he gets older. So now may actually be the opportune time to do it. But I think, you know, it sounds like your vet's, you know, absolutely right that there is a risk of putting him under anesthesia for this. And unfortunately, it is necessary to get a proper teeth cleaning is for the anesthesia.
I bought some of the stuff like the, you know, gels and things, but I know that they're probably not going to.
Yeah, they don't really work.
Yeah.
Now, after the cleaning, if you want to continue with that, it may prevent the accumulation of tartar and things.
Right. Okay. Because, I mean, obviously he could live a few more years, so I don't want, like
you
said, his quality of life to be greatly diminished. And if we don't get it done, but I was just trying to weigh out the risk if it's worth it at this point or not. So
it's definitely a hard call.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Alrighty, you're welcome.
Thank you so much. 1-800-348-2551. Carla is online, too. Carla, where are you calling from?
Napanac.
Hey, nice to have you on the show. You are on the air with Dr. Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a very long-term animal lover. I've had dogs and cats and birds and fish my entire life. And I've noticed a increase in, I understand that there's, you know, new medical procedures. I mean, I heard your credentials. I was quite impressed. I was thinking to myself, maybe you should be a physician and not a vet, but we all know it's harder to become a vet. So having said that, when I was young, the animal got sick, we took the animal to the vet, and the vet had time to put the animal down. As I said, I understand because of the increase in medical research for veterinarians, but this is where my question is based. Is there a veterinarian, say, code of ethics, code of, like, a Hippocratic code? And if there is it taught in, it should be taught, I guess it's taught in veterinarian school. And if there is there a historical part to it in terms of has that changed as medical practices get more complex? How do you deal with, that bottom line, when do you actually encourage the person to say, I think it may be time to put the animal down? That's basically my question.
Yeah. That as a specialist, is a problem that, you know, we do encounter, I wouldn't say frequently, but it's not rare to see this problem of when do we draw the line, just because, and I always tell my clients, just because we can do surgery doesn't mean that it's something we should do. And it kind of comes down to not only my judgment, but also the owner's judgment, because not only we're now not treating pets anymore, we're actually treating children with four legs and a tail. And so a lot of our pets have become more like a family member rather than days in the past when a dog was a dog and it worked on the farm and this is what its job was. But when its job could no longer be performed, it wasn't useful anymore. And so we've kind of graduated from that into having our dogs live with us and become part of our family members, and our cats too, and things. It is a tough fine line to walk. We certainly are taught in veterinary medicine to first do no harm, and so, you know, every veterinarian's different with how they tackle this. But when I see a case, let's take, for instance, we've got a animal with terminal cancer. If I think that I can, you know, give that dog or cat a better quality of life with minimal effect on them, then I say, okay, you know, maybe it's worth it to put them through it. But if there's going to be a very long, lengthy surgery with high morbidity or high amount of complications that we can see or whatnot in a long recovery, maybe we don't do that if we're not going to be able to get that cure in our older pets. Mm.
Okay. Well, I think you answered it very well, and we lost Carla there, but I think she heard you. 1-800-348-2551. Kim in Stamford, Vermont. Kim, you're on.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
I'm just calling. I wanted to follow up with a question that the gentleman had earlier about his cat that's spraying all over. We actually have a 15-and-a-half-year-old female that we've had since she was only 2 weeks and had been abandoned. We'd fostered her. still have her, and she will back up to things. We've nicknamed it Fluffer Butting because it just seems like a better way to describe what she does.
I don't know if you can say that on the radio, but you did. Well, well done.
She'll back up, though, and raise her tail and, you know, shake her like she's simulating spraying something. She's never, ever done it. There's never been anything. She's been spayed is from the point where she could be. Never, ever had an issue. I don't know if it's almost, you know, like rubbing a scent gland or she's simulating marking something or claiming it. She'll do it to my husband, to furniture. It just doesn't matter. She just walks through, backs up, and, you know, you see everything shake, and then she goes away.
And never any urine that's coming
no.
out. Wow, that's a very interesting situation.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of a cat that does that. That would look good on YouTube, probably.
Well, this gets back to that cats being neurotic point we had earlier.
A bit.
This is true.
I'm not really sure what to say about that one.
Okay.
Very
well, I guess as long as nothing's ever coming up, then you know, we don't really have an issue with it. It's a little embarrassing when company's there.
I'll bet.
But thank you for introducing fluffer butting into our vocabulary. Kim, thanks a lot.
Have a good day.
You too.
All right. George in Milford, Pennsylvania. You're on, George.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My call is about my cat troubles. She's like 15 years old, and I had another cat named Trixie who was a bit older that I had gotten. And when she got near the end of her life, she got sick, and we took her to the vet, and the vet tried to give her air, but she died at the vet's, and I think it was out of fear. And so now when Troubles has a problem, I'm afraid to take her to the vet, but she has a problem with her skin because she's basically removed most of the fur around her chin and a little bit near her throat there. And it seems like she's lost a bit of fur in other places, although it's not really, you know, that obvious. I'm not even sure about that. And there's like a brown, what I'm assuming is dead brown skin. And she's currently being treated for fleas, but it's not that I've seen any on her. I just keep both of my cats on front line.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I'm not very happy with the performance of the front line, but the young one goes out, so I need the front line on him for the ticks also. Also, she's lost a lot of weight. I don't know whether it's because of being old or because of the younger one named Benjamin. You know, he wants to play with her all the time, so it's kind of like bullying probably from her point of view.
Right.
I noticed that she scratched his nose just a little while ago.
Oh, boy. That'll teach him.
Yeah.
Does she still eat her meals, and is she eating a lot, or?
No, and she used to eat quite a bit, and now she's hardly eating anywhere near as much. She was obese, and now she's not.
Oh. And is she drinking, or is she urinating?
I've seen her drink quite a bit of water, and she seems to urinate really a lot, because I clean her litter box every day, and it seems like maybe I need to choose a different time, but I seem to always find it with you know, that she's just gone to the bathroom.
Right. I wonder if she's not having a deeper-seated issue, like maybe kidney problems or, you know, possibly an issue with the thyroid, but I would really worry about either kidney problems or diabetes. And those can have effects on the skin. So I realize it's hard, it's scary to take her back to the vets with your last experience with your other cat, but it might be time for that.
Right. Oh, I was thinking about it. And the younger one has a cough. It's very deep, and yet other times it seems pretty high up. To me, it sounds almost like an obstruction, and he has a bad habit of chewing things. Maybe he swallowed something he shouldn't have, but I thought that if it was the case, that I would have known, but I was kind of you really need to take him to the hospital right then thing, except that this cough, it doesn't happen very often, sometimes not for a day or two, and often it'll just be a single cough. I'm wondering allergies, because I've seen him sneeze.
Cats do get asthma too, so that's another consideration.
Does the cold have anything to do with this, with the deep cough? Because I've seen with a lot of feral cats that I've dealt with, that ones that are outside all winter and can't get help really other than maybe a plate of food, you often hear them have that same very deep cough, and they have the, you know, the eye problem going
right on.
I assume, is that have to do with the weather being cold?
Not necessarily the weather, but more likely a viral infection or so. And the viral infection can be passed from cat to cat. And
right.
In the winter, cats, you know, they tend to congregate in warmer areas, so they may be in closer proximity with one another.
Right.
All right. George, we're going to move it along here. Are you listening on 90.9 in Milford, Pennsylvania?
Yes, I am.
Well, I appreciate the call more than you know, and thanks a lot for being with us today. Let's go over to Nell on line 3. Hi, Nell. Nell, are you there?
Merrill. It's actually Merrill.
Oh, it says Nell up there, but I'll call you Merrill. And you're in New Paltz?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Welcome up. Welcome aboard. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm on the radio.
Yep.
Okay. Anyway, I have a dog, and she's about 2.5 years old. She got into a fight with our neighbor's dog. Apparently, the male dog tried to mount her.
Oh, boy.
And she did not like that, and she ended up hurting this dog pretty badly.
Oh.
Although she had been actually very good with other dogs and good with children and good with, you know, she's a very loving dog, but when that dog and that fight kind of changed her whole personality, and she's still very good with people and some dogs, but she's, become a little aggressive with dogs that defensive way, you know,
right.
Like if a dog comes over to her and is hyper and jumps on her. But the other thing is she's kind of obsessed with the dog she got in a fight with. Like, we can see their house from our window, and she's always looking out the door, and, you know, when she hears the dog barking, she's like, you know, it's like neurotic.
She's paranoid. Kind of like,
maybe she changed her mind.
She's obsessed with this dog, and it's a little scary. I mean, we got an electric fence, so she doesn't leave the yard. But actually, the other day, the battery was a little low, and we didn't know it, and she got out. And, you know, so I'm always living in this state of fear because I'm afraid she's going to hurt that dog. Anyway, I've talked with vets. No one seems to have much of an answer for this. It's kind of complicated.
Yeah. It is a complicated thing when we start talking about dog behavior. And I presume both of these are neutered animals. Your dog is spayed and the other one's castrated.
Yeah, my dog is spayed. I'm not sure about the other one. And the other dog is a male Jack Russell Terrier, and he's got his own problems. But, she just didn't like when he jumped on her like
right.
that was it.
And it's hard to know a lot of, like if we're taking out the whole sexually intact population and looking at just the neutered animals, a lot of them will mount the other in either to get them to play or as a show of dominance.
This was definitely a show of dominance.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
She must have felt quite threatened.
I have a friend who I sometimes walk with, and she has a big German Shepherd, a real lovey-dovey dog. And the ironic thing is, like, my dog is not aggressive with that dog at all. I mean, she doesn't play with him, but she's not interested in hurting him.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's just this dog.
Right. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I wish I could offer you some advice, but I sometimes it's a certain dog that will set the other one off and other types of dog like that one.
So just keep them apart is the best plan.
That's the best plan.
And maybe pull the window shade down. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I actually called a trainer because I thought maybe I could socialize her a little better with other, you know, like I said, she was fine with other dogs
Absolutely.
Before this happened. You know, I thought that. Anyway, okay, well, thanks anyway.
Good luck.
Meryl, thanks a lot. We only have about a minute and a half here. Mike in Ghent, you're up, but just about a minute, okay?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. About 12 weeks ago, I noticed my cat was drinking a lot of water and peeing a lot, so I took him to the vet, and he was diagnosed with diabetes. His glucose level was up over 500.
Wow.
And, They started him on insulin twice a day at 2 units. I've been going back to the vets every 2 to 3 weeks and having his glucose level monitored. And his level is still at 425, and he's up to 6 units a day.
Wow.
That's 6 units twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
And My vet also, the last time I went 2 weeks ago, he gave me a high-protein food to give him.
I'm
just wondering if there's anything else I can do to help lower his glucose level, and is the level being that high for so long, is he going to have more serious problems?
Okay, Doc, we only have about 15 seconds to give a quick answer, so I apologize.
My quick answer is that I'm a surgeon, and so I don't have a lot of experience with diabetes, more so than the general practitioners, but something to consider would be maybe an at-home glucose curve to see what the cat's doing at home outside of the stressful hospital environment.
All right, Mike, we'll have to leave it there, but a lot of diabetes questions.
Absolutely.
Today.
My goodness.
Thank you so much to Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick for being here with us. Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com, the Garrison in the Hudson Highlands, a country inn and the Valley Restaurant, now open all year with Hudson River views, private event spaces, winter getaway packages, and holiday gift certificates available, thegarrison.com. Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com. And Yarns for Your Soul, Manchester Center, Vermont, offering yarns from around the world. Knitting and crochet supplies, classes and guidance, gift certificates available, yarnsforyoursoul.com. Thanks again to Dr. Courtney Fitzpatrick. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Colleen O'Connell answered the calls. Tom Jobe was our media maven. And thanks to you for sticking around and listening today. I'm Ray Graff, our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. Tomorrow on the show, it's automotive repair with our buddy Gordon Fricke. Stay tuned now for a news update.